What do you know? More rain is in the forecast. We had a day or two this weekend with the sun. Anyway, it's going to cost a lot to turn us into a green economy. You may have read some estimates put that number in the trillions, but advocates say that we have to do it to save the planet. Plus, it's going to create a whole bunch of new industries. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Hope you had a nice, sunny weekend. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but if you read and listen to what scientists and futurists have to say, our near future is going to undergo a radical transformation, and that means how we travel, how we eat, work, heat, cool, you name it, it's going to be different. It just will be different. Now, those same climate change observers say if we don't do it, then game over. So if you believe them, and according to the polls, 78% of us believe that climate change is happening, and 58% believe it's caused by the burning of fossil fuels, then you most likely believe that change must be made. So how are we going to do that? And how do we make a living doing it? It's easy to say to change, and then when you go home at night and that pocket is empty, ugh. Well, there are a number of ways that we can do this, and today we're going to look at some of them. Alex Williams is back with us. He's the owner and director of operations of Blue Earth Compost. Alex was with us the other week. He was on for just a few minutes, and we wanted to get him back for a longer segment because of what he does and how important it is for our future, so we figured we'd get him back for a nice long chin wag. Hey, Alex, how are you?
How's it going, Ron? Good to be back.
It's great to have you back on. Now, for those who didn't see or hear the last segment, what is Blue Earth Compost?
So we are a residential, commercial, and event food scrap collection service. Basically, we collect food scraps from those different entities, and instead of them going to incineration, we bring them to a plant that turns them into a renewable energy source and also makes compost out of the back end.
Okay, so you take the stuff, our food that we throw out, that we normally mix in with all the other stuff that we throw out, and you take it and turn it into gold. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yep.
You're an alchemist.
Yeah, I'd like to say so.
How long? Okay, let's just do a little bit of the specifics, get down to the nitty-gritty, if you will. So sure. Let's say I hire you. I hire Blue Earth Compost. I'm going to pay you a fee to pick up my food waste, right?
Yeah. Our residential service is a subscription-based service. Exactly. If you sign up for weekly collections, it's $30 a month, or every other week collections, it's $20 a month. And then our commercial service varies widely depending mainly on where you're located within the state and also the volume of scraps that you produce.
Okay. So you take my food waste and do you for the most part turn it into compost or do you bring it over to the plant and turn it into energy?
So the vast majority of the stuff that we collect now is going to an anaerobic digestion facility. So it is first turned into renewable energy, and then the byproduct of that process, which is called digestate, it can then also be composted. So it's kind of a two-folder, sort of a dual-purpose way of processing the material.
Digestate. Sounds like it, you know, like I had too many tacos or something. I mean,
very much so. It doesn't look that appetizing either.
Can you make money doing this? I mean, do you make a living out of this? How long have you been doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why we're still doing it today. My parents and I bought the business back in April of 2014, so a little bit more than 5 years ago. And it was a real small residential service at that time. It only had 22 customers. We've just been steadily growing it since then. And, yeah, thankfully we're able to make a go of it.
So these are the people who have the financial wherewithal to actually hire you to do the right thing, to get rid of this food waste, which would normally go into a landfill?
Yeah, so in Connecticut, all of our garbage is incinerated, actually. We don't have any more active landfills in the state, so it's either incinerated here or it's trucked or shipped out of state to be landfilled. And that's exactly right. Yeah, all of it would be going there if we weren't collecting it.
If I'm a homeowner and I'm paying you to do this, Can I get a tax break or something by hiring you? Or am I doing this out of the goodness of my heart?
Yeah, unfortunately, no, not at this stage. That would be really nice to see sort of the state government or local governments incentivize these kind of programs. But right now, no, it's more just the environmentally friendly people out there that are our main customer base. We also, as part of our residential service, offer finished compost back. So three times a year, we'll deliver the actual stuff you can put into your garden or lawn or houseplants. So there is some value added to the service as well.
Okay, we're talking mostly about homeowners. Do you have a lot of businesses?
Yeah, actually, that's the much larger side of our business in terms of the volume that we collect. So we started doing commercial service in the spring of 2015, so right around a year after I purchased the company. And yeah, right now we've got over 75 stops, and we collect a whole bunch of stuff every week, tons and tons and tons. So
The statistic I read the other week, and I'm doing this by memory now, is that when it comes to garbage in our state, usually it's the paper products that are number one, and number two, believe it or not, is food waste. Is that right?
That's exactly right, yeah. Compostable material, both yard waste, like green waste, and food waste is the number one. If you combine those two, it's the number one segment or pie in the chart of our municipal waste stream.
Okay, so you're up in the Hartford area. Are there competing mm-hmm. firms? Are there firms down in Fairfield County, New Haven, New London?
Yeah, so around us, there's nobody that does exactly what we do. There's obviously trash companies, but nobody that focuses solely on food waste diversion. Down in New Haven, there is a guy named Domingo Medina who runs Peels on Wheels, which is a bike collection service just for residents and small commercial customers, if I'm not mistaken. And then out in Ridgefield, I believe, is Curbside Compost. And they do stuff similar to us with both a commercial side and a residential side as well.
Give me the name of that firm again. Did you say Peelside Wheels?
Peels on Wheels.
Peels on Wheels. That's awesome.
Yeah.
that's a great yep. name. Well, you got to be creative in this industry.
Exactly.
So how do you expand? What do you need to make your business grow?
Sure. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, it's more just continuing on the road that we're on right now, trying to get more people to become aware of the service. So far, we have really relied solely on word of mouth, both commercially and residentially. But we're starting to put more dollars behind doing some more like traditional marketing, if you will. We also ran a crowdfunding campaign recently that was really successful. So, yeah, I think a lot of that word of mouth stuff has helped us. But if we can take that next step to try to reach more people, I think that by and large, per the statistics you mentioned earlier, people want to do this kind of stuff. And if they have a little bit of disposable income, if you just give them the option, they really want to do the right thing by their communities.
Are you getting any backing from the state? Are you hearing from any legislators or the governor's office or anyone saying, this sounds like a great program, let's expand it?
Yeah, absolutely. We have had some really good contact with elected officials. Actually, during the crowdfunding campaign, we did a news conference right outside of the Capitol with Mayor Bronin and Senator Blumenthal, Representative Ritter, Representative McGee. So we had some really good support there. We also received a DECD loan for the new dump truck that we just purchased. So they've financially helped us in that way. So, yeah, the state has been fairly supportive to date, and we hope that continues, definitely.
I would hope they would be because, as you pointed out, we don't have any landfills left. I mean, it has to go someplace.
Yeah. Exactly, and that brings up maybe the most important part about this whole discussion is not only do we not have any landfills left in the state, but our incineration infrastructure is aging, to say the least. There was many stories written this winter about the trash to energy plant that's in the south end of Hartford and how it had shut down for several months because the system was just failing, basically. And they were thankfully able to get it back up and running, so we didn't have to continue to ship stuff out of state. But at the same time, It's indicative of the fact that we need to find better solutions to dealing with materials that we throw out. And if we can compost or digest and turn into renewable energy food scraps right here in the state, I think that's a pretty logical solution to the problem.
Alex, I've really enjoyed speaking with you. I have a minute left, and I just have to, I'm going to turn it to a personal angle because I've attempted to compost. I wasn't very good at it, but with the minute we have left, what's the trick for those listening?
Sure. If you want to do it in your backyard, the biggest thing that you can do is try to keep the pile aerated. A lot of people, what they'll do is they'll just put their food waste and then some carbon source like leaves or mulch together in a pile, and they think if they turn it, say, once every 2 weeks or so, that it'll just magically turn into compost. It will not. You have to aerate the pile. Oxygen is the most important part about that process, and it's what's going to make the food break down ultimately and give you that good product.
So you're talking about turning it over once a day?
Not that often, but I would say at least once a week at a bare minimum. If you could do twice, that would really be ideal for sure.
Heck, it sounds like a good workout. Beats going to the Y, right?
That's the truth. That's the absolute truth.
Alex Williams, owner and director of operations of Blue Earth Compost. Alex, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming back on, and we'll get you back in the future.
Okay. Thanks again, Rob.
Brian Garcia is with us. He's president and CEO of Connecticut Green Bank. Susan Young is sitting right next to him. She's a Bridgeport resident. And joining us on the phone is Tom Nahart, who is CEO of Posigen. And Tom, you're down in New Orleans?
I am.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
On your show.
It's a pleasure to have everybody here. Brian, first of all, welcome. It's nice to meet you. For those who don't know what the Connecticut Green Bank is, what is it?
So, Ron, thank you.
I'm going to turn that mic a little bit so
there
that way.
There you go.
Perfect.
Ron, thank you. We're excited to be here this afternoon with you. So the Connecticut Green Bank is the nation's first green bank. We were created by an act of legislation, a bipartisan approved piece of legislation in July of 2011. And essentially what we focus on is making clean energy more affordable and accessible to families and businesses. And that's to say that we provide the capital that families and businesses need to finance clean energy improvements on their property. And we do that by leveraging limited public resources that we receive and turning that into multiples of private investment, because we know that the more investment that happens in your green economy, we get all the benefits that society is after. We get more clean energy deployed in our community. We get more jobs created in our communities. The energy burden on families and businesses is reduced as a result of clean energy deployment. And then, of course, we get all of the air pollution reduction benefits from a public health perspective that are important to our local communities, as well as reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. That's obviously important to confronting climate change. So that's what we do.
So as they used to say back in the 80s, it's a win-win.
Win-win-win all the way around. Yeah, however many wins, there's a lot of them there.
Do you get enough funding from the state?
We do. We currently actually get funding from the electric ratepayer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about $7 to $10 a year.
Get anything from the state or just through the utilities when we pay our bills?
That's right, just through the utilities.
Okay.
So $7 to $10 a year. That aggregates to about $26 million a year that we turn into $300 million of investment into Connecticut's green economy.
I'm going to hand you my portfolio one of these days. If you could turn $26 million into $300 million, that's not bad.
Hold on to that thought, Ron. We may be issuing green bonds, mini green bonds, here in 6 months. Stay tuned.
Nice. Okay, so I'm assuming that you'll be going to through the state of Connecticut, the treasurer's office, and then these bonds will be available for anybody to buy, whether individuals or institutions.
That's correct. We work really closely with our treasurer's office, and the idea would be to offer small denomination bonds, the ability for families and friends to invest in small bonds that would provide the capital needed to finance projects, sustainability projects across the state. So effectively, you'd be investing in your neighbor by buying these green bonds.
That sounds fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about solar energy in Connecticut. I've been looking into it for a while, just to turn it personal for a little bit, and I really want to do it. I had a little problem with huge trees on my property, so I was unable to do it for a long time, but I know the technology has changed enough nowadays where it looks like it will be financially viable for someone such as myself. Do you find the program expanding in Connecticut?
It is expanding quite a bit, and those trees are important. Keep those trees on your lot. The shade that they provide in the summer is a really important benefit to households. But yeah, in Connecticut, there are about 860,000 owner-occupied households in the state. And to date, we've had about 34,000 households switch to solar. And that demand is growing year after year. We see more and more of it. About 7,000 customers this year, we expect, will switch from conventional energy to installing solar PV on their rooftops.
Okay. Now, you have partnered with Posigen. And Tom, I'm going to bring you in 1 second here. And you have an innovative program.
That's correct. One of the things that we discovered along this pathway over the course of the last, 6 to 8 years has been that we've seen a lot of private investment come into Connecticut. But one of the challenges we faced when we started to look at the data is we worked with the University of Connecticut, and the data was telling us that, yes, you're bringing in a lot of private investment, but we are missing low to moderate income families. We had a big debate at our board, and obviously that was unacceptable, and we refocused our strategy to ensure that we could encourage more private investment to help low to moderate income families install solar PV, because when they do, we know what will happen is they'll actually lower their energy costs, and by reducing that energy burden, they're able to spend those savings back in the things that they need as a family. So it's really, really important that we enable them to install clean energy technologies.
Tom, how does Posigen play a role in this?
Well, at Posigen, we've always focused on the low to moderate income homeowner. We felt like if we could make a financial impact, and that impact, based upon the consumer, is going to be anywhere from $50 to $750 a year in net savings, that makes the biggest difference in those families, right? The lower income families are spending 15-20% of their disposable income on their utility bills. And so by pairing energy efficiency and solar, we're able to get much more savings than just the standard solar offering. And by focusing in those communities, we're making a bigger difference, right? I say all the time, if you make $100,000 a year and I save you $50, you're going to spend it at Starbucks. If I put $50 a month back in the budget of a family that has a household income of $35,000 a year and three kids in school, that makes a difference, right? It's spent on school supplies, it's spent on groceries, and it makes a difference in their lives. And so we started with that mission in mind, and we found a great partner in the Connecticut Green Bank when we decided to come up to Connecticut. So I think Brian's being fairly modest. They don't just encourage private investment. They bring jobs. They bring they make a huge difference. We've got 70 direct employees up in Connecticut right now, and with subcontractors and indirect employees, we probably created close to 200 jobs in Connecticut alone just with our group.
Susan Young is with us, a resident of Bridgeport, and you have been very patient. I appreciate that. You are a beneficiary of this program, are you not?
That is correct.
Tell us about your home and your house and what you did.
Okay, well, I've looked into solar energy several years ago and was not able to access it because it was just out of my price range. And I actually had reached out to Posigen. And the program that they had offered me, which they still have, no money down, no credit requirement, was just really amazing program that once I reached out to them and I started getting the solar energy benefit and the solar and energy efficiency, I mean, the savings is just truly amazing. So I have to say that I'm one of those families that too was shut out from accessing renewable energy. Then came Posigen.
I think that's fantastic. Can I ask, do you generate enough solar energy that you can actually sell some back to the utility?
Most during the summer months, I generate more than enough. During the winter season, when it's a little bit shorter in the days, it's not a clear wide off, but it's definitely, without a doubt, it's a tremendous saving that I'm seeing per month.
Does it cover all of your electrical needs? Do you generate enough power that you don't even have to buy anything? I'm assuming if you're in Bridgeport, is it United Illuminating?
Yes, it is United Illuminating.
So do you have to buy anything from UI?
Well, I do because each home is unique, and it's because of my family makeup and me having teenage boys. They're always using.
That's the problem. I'm in the same boat. Why is that light on? Why are those 10 lights on in the room? Yeah. Turn it off, please. Wait. Okay, let's not go there. But we're in the same boat.
Yeah.
So you pretty much generate almost everything that you need.
Yes, I generate a lot, definitely.
Okay. Are you the only one in your neighborhood who has done this?
No, actually, my neighbors have, several neighbors in my community have gone solar. In fact, I remember a few years ago, there was only one house in Bridgeport on Lincoln Avenue that I saw solar panels, and I wanted to know, how does it work? Does it really work? Is it really a savings? And until Posigen came along, I mean, it was always, solar was always a mystery. Mm. And then when Posigen came aboard and make it accessible to everyone in the community, I mean, throughout Bridgeport, like almost every other neighborhood, you're seeing multiple homes with solar panels now. Families benefiting from the savings.
I think this is fabulous. Brian, how many households have you been able to contact in the state and actually have the panels installed?
So we have about 34,000 now households,
which you had said before,
and they've installed maybe 270 megawatts of solar PV. So that's quite a big power plant when you think about all these small homes installing solar PV across the state. So collectively together in those summer months when they are producing power, usually during summer peak periods, these households are not only helping themselves reduce the burden of energy costs, but they're actually helping the grid and other people on the grid by reducing overall load on the system.
Tom, is this basically, are you targeting cities? Are you going after Bridgeport, Norwalk, New Haven, Waterbury, Hartford?
We started in Bridgeport. We've expanded to the entire state. We put together Solar for All programs where we'll go in with the Connecticut Green Bank as our partner and work with a particular city to really focus on getting the message out and trying to get people involved in the program. So currently we're in Middletown, Connecticut. We kicked off our Solar for All campaign there last month. In fact, Brian and I were both up there working with the mayor to get people involved. And so we do go into the communities and really focus on it, but now we have expanded our footprint to cover the entire state.
Brian, I know we talked a little bit about funding. Who's coming up with the greenbacks for all this? I mean, is this still, once again, through your office and the private investments that you turned that 26 into 300?
Yeah, so think about the role of a public sector entity like the Connecticut Green Bank. So our whole role is to try to de-risk the perception by investors that this is an investment class that they should be putting their money. So what we effectively do is we come into a deal structure. Sometimes we're a catalyst to that structure. We bring all the partners together and say, take a look at this market because we think it's important that you invest in it. And then what we do is we subordinate ourselves into that structure, which is to say that we take the first loss if things happen in this investment fund. So that gives the other private investors a sense of security that, okay, you know, we'll put our investment in here. And if we see, you know, losses, then the Connecticut Green Bank is going to take them. And fortunately, what we've seen over the course of the last 6 to 8 years has been that households pay their debt payments or their lease payments for clean energy. Very low default rates, very low payment risks. So what we expect to see as a result of this is more capital providers. We're seeing our local banks now start to invest more in projects, even without us, which is great because we want to see them investing in Connecticut specifically to help us achieve our clean energy and climate change policies.
Susan, how much do you estimate that you've saved? Or is there a savings? You must have saved some, but at the same time, you also know that you're doing something good and that you have a sustained form of energy.
Okay, to answer that in a nutshell, because I have solar panels and the savings that I'm seeing, I'm able to do so much more, including going on vacation soon.
Nice.
Because of the savings. Per month, especially during the summer months, it would be okay for me to get an electric bill for $300 prior to having solar panels. If I do get a bill now, and I don't want to put it out there to say 60 or 50, and then every person listening think their bill is going to be.
But it's a lot less.
It is a whole lot less. Absolutely. It's a no-brainer.
That's fabulous.
Yes.
Good for you. And you did this because one, you were just walking around and you saw these solar panels and you became proactive. You were the one who actually reached out.
Yes. Well, actually, the panels that I saw on the roof, I have no clue where they came from, but that was just that one house.
That one house.
But I've always been wanting to, you know, invest or look into renewable energy. I'd reached out to a company prior to Posigen and was told that I needed $30,000. And that just pretty much just put a stalemate on me. I said, okay, renewable energy, solar is only for the rich, you know, little old me, I can't do that. So, you know, let me leave that alone. Until the mayor had, there was a commercial Posigen Solar coming to Bridgeport, no money down, no credit requirements, solar and energy efficiency bonded together. And I looked into it. And at first, I have to tell you, I thought it was too good to be true. Because
I understand that feeling.
Because going from hearing that you needed to put 30 grand down to no money down, you know, no credit requirement.
Right.
And all
you're
going to
do all these things for me and reduce my bills.
Exactly. And in fact, I just have to say, when they came out that day to install my panels, I did not go out and enjoy the process because I saw, you know, the crew, the installation crew, they came and they got suited up in their gear. They're bringing all the panels, putting it on my roof. I was like, who's going to pay these guys? You know, because I have not put a one penny down. And I have to say, once I got that first bill, where I was expecting about $260. That first bill was during July, really. So it was like $26, my first bill, full bill after getting solar. I thought the utility company made an error. So I reached out to UI and the lady said, oh, the representative was very nice. She said, oh, no, you have solar. It's working for you. It was that time I actually reached out to Posigen. And I said, you guys got to hire me because I had no clue.
I thought you were going to call them up and say it's vacation time. Let's all go crazy right now. Tom, we have about two and a half minutes left. How can, and I'm going to ask Brian the same question, how can people get in contact with you? Is there a website? This all sounds fantastic.
Yes, they can call us at 1-866-POSIGEN, or they can go on our website, www.posigen.com. And, you know, that's the problem we get, right? We tell everybody there's no credit required, there's no income requirements, and we're going to put this really nice solar system up on your roof. We're going to come in and do a full BPI energy audit, and then we're going to do all the energy efficiency upgrades, and we're going to guarantee that your utility bill is reduced by more than what you pay us in your very first year. So we're guaranteeing savings in your first year, and we do get, that sounds too good to be true. Why would anyone do this? You're guaranteeing me savings. You're basically saying you're going to put money back in my pocket, and all I do is sign up here. And it's true, and it's because of people like Brian Garcia, and it's because of the focus that we have in changing our environment and going from burning things to create electricity to allowing the sun to create electricity by focusing on reducing the cost to run our homes. And it's a national push, it's a state push, and I tell people all the time, it's not too good to be true, it's just good enough to jump on board now.
And you don't even care if there are teenagers in the house. Brian, you're going to get the last word here today.
Well, if you're out there and you're a listener and you're thinking about solar PV or not, one of the first things you should do is do a home energy audit. So go to energizect.com and you'll pay, I think it's $125 copay. You'll get over $1,000 worth of direct install measures in your home, and that'll pay back pretty quickly within a six-month period. So everyone should get out there and see how much they're consuming and spending on energy. The second on solar PV, you know, it's Posigen's doing a great job in and around the state of Connecticut. But as a solar PV shopper, you want to take a look at all your alternatives. So go to GoSolarCT.com. Up there, you'll see all the great contractors in the state, the various financing programs that are out there, and shop around. You want to find the best opportunity for you and your family, because at the end of the day, when you put solar PV on your rooftop, you're going to be saving on your energy costs, and you're going to be doing all those great things we want to see for the environment and the community.
So. We've given everyone a lot of phone numbers and websites, and if you go to our Twitter account, which is FullStoryWSHU, we'll have everything there so you can access everything there. Susan Young from Bridgeport, thank you. It was a pleasure meeting
you.
Tom Nehart, CEO of Posigen. Tom, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us on. We really appreciate it.
And Brian Garcia is the president, the CEO of Connecticut Green Bank, and we'll get everybody back in the future. And Susan, I hope you have a wonderful vacation.
Thank you. I intend to.
It's the full story on WSHU. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. It's the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Today, our conversation is about making a living and planning to do it in the future for what some have called the green economy. We're going to change tack just a little bit now, not too much. We're going to bring in Maritza Silva Farrell, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. If I didn't, I do apologize. Executive Director of Align, the Alliance for Greater New York. Maritza, welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
And John Brooks is a New York Democratic State Senator. He represents Massapequa and Amityville. Senator, welcome. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Good to hear you, rather.
Same here. I know it's Monday, right? And it's like, what?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Got to wake up and get going here. Maritza, I read a report over the weekend. It said the poor of the world will be facing the greatest impacts from global warming and climate change than any other group. I'm assuming that you're going to agree with that, huh?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, this is not just a theory. We've seen it, you know, through the past 20 years where we have experienced catastrophes happening here, even in New York City, when we were hit by Hurricane Sandy. We experienced that, and the majority of folks who were affected the most were low-income people of color who disproportionately are living in areas that are considered environmental justice areas. So it is a reality. We're seeing it every day. You know, we've seen what happened in Puerto Rico, and it is known. This is no news for anybody to know that the folks who have the least are the ones that are affected the most. So you probably have heard the saying of climate change affects us all, but not all of us the same, right? So that what you just say is completely correct.
Senator, speaking about hurricane or superstorm Sandy, I was at a party at a house on the Sound the other weekend, a beautiful place. But I have to admit, a little bit of a jaundiced eye at times. And I'm looking at the location, and I'm thinking about storms, and I'm thinking about Sandy. And the homeowners, I was speaking to them, lovely people. They basically said, look, we have a generator. It's all good. And it got me thinking, are we all going to keep going as we are until the waters basically rise up enough and make us behave differently?
No, I think we have to recognize what's happening. Certainly, if you're here on the South Shore of Long Island and those areas most impacted by Sandy, you'll see how many of those houses have been elevated. I think we really have to think about further development in certain areas, those areas where we expect to see problems associated with storm surge and the rest. I think we have to use Sandy as a good wake-up call. You know, I've worked with a number of people over the years with hurricane preparedness, and what happened in Hurricane Sandy was exactly what they said was going to happen when we got the, if you will, the right storm that moved in the right direction at high tide. Everything that happened in Sandy was predicted. So we have to use Sandy first as a learning tool. We've got to recognize how we have to prepare ourselves for some of those kinds of events that are out there in the future. The next Sandy's out there someplace. We just don't know where and when. And we also have to question what areas we allow to be developed, understanding what's happening. So I think it's a word to the wise, Sandy, in terms of recognizing what we do in the future.
Hmm. Senator Maritza, I have a question for both of you. And Maritza, I'm going to ask you to go first. Which communities are being impacted the most as we speak? And if you can give me some examples. Maritza?
Yes, again, I mean, like what I was saying earlier, what we consider the folks who are in the low-income bracket, right, like people who have less access to wealth are the ones who are affected the most, folks who are living in the areas that we consider to be environmental justice neighborhoods and areas. So going back to Hurricane Sandy, just an example, you know, areas of Coney Island were affected in areas of the Lower East Side where the majority of folks are people of color, immigrants. So where there is less wealth is where you will see the effects even farther. shared, and that's the reason why many people from across the state are ensuring and asking our governor, our state legislators to take action on climate, because we have seen for way too long how those communities continue to be impacted. So when we talk about climate change, we also need to acknowledge that climate change doesn't necessarily just happen, right? It has a real direct link to the issue of income inequality, and the folks who have not been able to access to good jobs, who have not been able to access to good education, are generally the folks who have been disproportionately in disadvantage in our society. And as we know it, those are the folks who are in the areas that are more prone to any kind of catastrophe and effects. So that's what we've been seeing, and that's what we're trying to change. And as the senator mentioned, you know, we have to be thoughtful as to that. Where do we build? How we ensure that the neighborhoods that are we're not mitigating against sort of like potential sea levels, like then we shouldn't be building there. We should be thoughtful about, you know, how do we protect our city, our state from any other catastrophes, taking in consideration the folks who have been affected the most for way too long.
Senator Brooks, can you give us any examples, sir?
I think a good example in areas that were most affected by Sandy here on the island, where communities of homes were elevated, you'll see five or six homes in a row that are elevated, and then there will another home that has not been elevated at all. And in more cases than not, it is a home with somebody with limited financial resources to respond to that stuff. So I think a lot of the comments that were just made in terms of people's financial ability does play a role when we're trying to respond to what's happening in terms of environmental changes and future problems that we expect to see. So there's no question that the financial capabilities that someone has, and then also the locations they're actually at, are going to present a challenge for some people to prepare for and respond to the changing environment that we're going to see.
Maritza, Align wants more jobs in what is called renewable jobs. What's a renewable job?
Well, we're talking about green energy projects, which are essentially critical part of the what we think is the state's economic future. Right now, just speaking for today, over 156,000 New Yorkers are employed in the clean energy sector, which is basically solar panels, installation of solar panels, weatherization projects where you retrofit some of the buildings that already exist. If we're talking about building up perhaps wind turbines, so all kinds of renewable energy projects that will ensure that we create energy in our state while moving away from the use of fossil fuels. So those are the green energy projects, and those are the kind of green jobs that we're looking to expand even at the state level farther and farther. As we all know, the transition to clean energy, requires some investment in what we call the renewable jobs. And for that, we'll need to just ensure that workers who are going to be moving into this sector are going to be accessing to good jobs. And again, as we mitigate against climate change, we have to think about how do we mitigate against income inequality. So here, when we talk about renewable energy, we have an opportunity to actually do both. And my organization in particular focuses on many policies that addresses those two big issues as we see right now being the biggest threats of our country and our world.
Senator, how do you see renewable jobs merging with labor and immigration and the economy?
Well, I think it is absolutely an opportunity for the future. Farmingdale State College here in Farmingdale is actually putting together a green jobs program from an educational standpoint to prepare people for the opportunities we see coming with things like the wind opportunities off the coast here on Long Island, the solar. And here on Long Island, most homes in my neighborhood all have solar panels. I think there's a great opportunity here. Farmingdale State is taking a leadership role in that area, putting together a green economy job force training situation, train people on how to work on these wind and solar activities and take a look at stuff. So I think what we have to be right now is forward thinking, recognizing this technology, this change is coming to move towards green energy, and preparing people to be successfully employed in that area, giving them the knowledge of how these systems work and be employed and what positions are going to open up. So I think, at least here on Long Island with Farmingdale State, they're being very proactive in that area.
Maritza, you're supporting New York State's Climate and Community Protection Act. Now, if I got the numbers right, it'll require a 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by, I think, 2030, and then it's going to be 100% renewable energy economy-wide by 2050. Now, those are some hefty and laudable goals. Are they realistic? And where does this actually stand in the legislative process?
I mean, it is realistic when we think about the state that we're living in, right? So the IPCC report warned us that we do not have a lot of time. We have about 12 years or so to address some of these issues. So it is realistic when we think about the future of our families. I have a five-year-old who I would like to make sure that, he and his family get a chance to enjoy some of the things that we have today. For that to happen, we have to mitigate against climate change and ensure that we create policies that will protect our states and our country. So in terms of it is realistic, yes, it is, given that we have urgency right at this moment. And the other piece is that we are thinking about this policy actually is one of the policies that will allow for our state to lead in terms of how do we have to move away fossil fuels, create a green economy. As the senator mentioned, the future of our economy can be and should be in terms of investing in renewable energy. I am a believer that, the time is now. There is an urgency. We should not be waiting. And my biggest hope is that the state legislature and the Senate and the Assembly and the governor will actually be in unified force, to ensure that this legislation moves forward. In terms of where things are at, I am pleased to say that the Assembly and the Senate, there is majority in the Assembly and the Senate right at the moment in terms of supporting the legislation and the policy. And the governor really needs to be the one who takes a stance at this particular moment. And also, as far as I understand, there is some internal conversations that are taking place in terms of timeline and how things should be played out. But I think for no one in the state who actually lived the experience of Sandy, it is a situation of, like, let's wait and see what happened. We cannot wait for another hurricane to affect our state, our city. We cannot allow for us to think that we have time when we don't. So the time to act, we always say, is now. And so, yes, I am in full support, and I am hopeful that our governor will take the right, will stand in the right side of history here and do the right thing for our state.
And the New York State Assembly doesn't have much time left itself, only a short time left to pass a number of bills. Senator, I'm almost out of time now. Part of the legislation has to do with the prevailing wage legislation. Can you give us a quick synopsis of what this entails?
Well, basically, where we are in the prevailing wage is there are negotiations going on, and they're still going on. I'm not going to comment on where they are. We're being kept update in the discussions that are being had. But I think it's critical for us to recognize that we need to come to an agreement on this area, be in a position where we can manage growth over the next 50 years with different projects. So I think both sides are actively involved in that discussion. And I'm very hopeful that we're going to come to an agreement before the end of the session. I just wanted to make one other comment on the goals that were just being addressed. They are aggressive. It's going to require real commitment. But if we look at history in 1960, where we were nowheres in our space program, President Kennedy committed to put man on the moon by the end of the decade, and we did that. So in terms of the green energy and the jobs and what we want to change environmentally, if we make the commitment, we can do it. All about commitment.
Maritza, do you see that commitment there? Do you think that the legislators, and I think more importantly, the public, I mean, the people that you know, are they ready to change? Because it's going to require a change across the board.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the folks who we organize and talk with every day in an effort to ensure that these policies come forward are no policies that come from the top down. Those policies come actually from the ground up. Many environmental justice organizations are part of this coalition and groups who have been engaged in the climate fight for many, many years. So, yes, people are ready. People are ready to make sure that this actually happen. And we also, I should just point out, in terms of the politics, we're ready to a different kind of looking at the politics. And I appreciate what Senator Brooks just said. Like, you know, the commitment is really critical, because this commitment is not a political commitment. This is a commitment for our livelihoods. This is a commitment for our future that we all should be making. And I'm very hopeful that the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor will actually come together to make a commitment that will actually set the tone for not only our state, but for the country. We all are ready, and I really appreciate the interview.
You know, Senator, I was thinking about it over the weekend. I was thinking 10 years from now, there's a chance that everything could be so completely different. Do you ever stop and think that way, too, or is it just me?
No, I think we have to just look at, again, history in our lifetime and how we went from the invention to the automobile to the plane to sending a man to the moon. We are changing, and we are advancing at a tremendous rate. Technology is a great tool for us. The computerized systems we're designing give us all kinds of skills, to the point that computers perform surgeries for us and do different things. This stuff can be done. It's a matter of recognizing that we do have to do it. There are environmental problems that we face, and there are changes that are going on in terms of our environment. We have got to step up and do that. To not do it, the long-range projection is not a good one. But look at all that we've accomplished in the last decade.
Senator, I have to hold you there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. John Brooks is a New York Democratic State Senator representing Massapequa, Amityville. Maritza Silva-Farrell is the Executive Director of ALIGN, the Alliance for a Greater New York. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank, digital editor. Associate producers Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, J.D. Allen produced. Ann Lopez, senior producer. Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.